Hello, my name is Nicholas Morgan. I'm an editor at Aval News, and this is Turkey Abroad. Joining me today is Selpi Gazarian. She is the director of the University of Southern California's Institute of Armenian Studies. Selpi, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Nicholas.
So we both know that coming up on Saturday is the 106th anniversary of the Armenian Genocide, and it's going to be Armenian Genocide Remembrance Day. And the topic that is on a lot of people's mind based on recent reporting is whether or not President Biden is going to follow through on a campaign promise to recognize the Armenian Genocide, which would be a monumental break in U.S. foreign policy across the last several decades or so by now. What I want to know is, I presume you're already familiar with the reports, and we've seen these reports from other presidents in the past as well, but what are your initial reactions to this news about the prospect that President Biden may break with that tradition and follow through on his promise?
You know, the last time a president said genocide with the word Armenian in front of it was President Reagan. And so it's not as if presidents have not said this. It's just that what it has become is a political football, a thing to be hanging over either Turkey's head or Armenians' heads, depending on what the bilateral foreign policy agenda with Turkey, between Turkey and the United States, is those days. The fact that President Biden has given all of the signals indicating that he will in fact say genocide is of course hugely welcome, gratifying. But at the same time, it makes one worry that we are putting a great deal of weight on these symbolic pronouncements, which are, again, hugely important, but not the end of the world. At the end of the day, how much of an effect this has really on American foreign policy and on Turkey's actions. That's what we're going to have to see. And that's why it's really important to remember that this potential announcement, this hopeful announcement, we're recording this 2 days before the day when the announcement theoretically is going to be made, is really important at various levels.
Mm-hmm. And it's also interesting because, as you mentioned, many presidents have given the signals that they may recognize the Armenian Genocide. Of course, this makes me think of President Obama, who, as a candidate, also mentioned that he would recognize the genocide as such, only to not do so after 8 years in office. And this was something of a sore point, it seemed, with some of his aides, including Ben Rhodes or now Samantha Power, who herself is with the Biden administration. They both remarked that it was a regret for both of them that the Obama administration did not actually follow through on recognition. But that was 2008, that was 2016, and now we're in 2021 with a completely different context for the United States at home and then relationships with Turkey. So in your view, do you think there's anything that might separate President Biden from his predecessors right now, if on any willingness to, you know, take on Turkish umbrage by considering recognizing the genocide?
I think that in some ways we do the cause of condemning genocide as a political tool. In some ways we do it a disservice by not really looking at the content of what has been said over these years, particularly President Obama's first year. That one paragraph minus the word genocide was as damning as you can get. So I think we need to recognize, we meaning the world, not just Armenians, not just Americans.
Of course.
We need to recognize that the point of all of this is to say that a government cannot choose political violence against its own citizens as a political remedy for domestic issues, which is exactly what the government of the Ottoman Empire did, and which Turkey continues to do. And so, you know, when I keep saying that the importance of this Biden announcement that will hopefully be made is really on various levels. Look, it's important to me as an Armenian, no doubt about it. My grandmother deserves the honor and the recognition that comes with acknowledging that her death was not accidental. It wasn't just part of a huge, large number of people who were killed, but that it was intentional by the government that was supposed to protect her. So it's clearly important to me as an Armenian. It's important to me as an Armenian today, because this is the beginning of a path to hold Turkey, today's Turkey, accountable for its actions against, again, its own population, including dissidents in Turkey, not Armenians, including Armenians in Turkey. So it's important to me as an Armenian. It's important to me as an American. I believe in American values. I believe in everything that I have read and learned about, you know, beginning with the founding fathers and all the way through the foreign policy decisions that have been made with human rights in mind. As an American, it's important to me that our foreign policy agenda is complex enough that it can include human rights agenda, as well as all of the other sorts of bilateral issues on anybody's table. But finally, and this is really, I think, important, Nicholas, today for the world, this is important because if the United States and other powers with leverage in the world are able to consistently say, look, human rights matters, then there is a predictable world, if not order, set of relationships. Then other governments, Sudan, Syria, you name it, Myanmar, you know, then other governments will realize that yes, US foreign policy is consistent when it comes to human rights. And that is something to come to terms with. And that predictability has huge value in terms of a stable, peaceful world order. So it's important at all sorts of levels.
And would you say that you have confidence that President Biden and his administration are able to appreciate the ability to maintain a complex foreign policy strategy, of course, while also giving human rights a meaningful place within it? Because, of course, some observers do see it as a remedy to just the last 4 years under President Trump, where human rights advocacy appeared to out of take a backseat or was used very selectively, depending on their relationship with a particular country. And then, of course, there was a bit of a mixed reaction to some of the early actions from the Biden administration. There was praise for, say, speaking up in the case of Alexei Navalny in Russia, or calling out the treatment of the Bosphorus University students in Turkey. But then there was some disappointment that he didn't act stronger when it came to Saudi Arabia and Jamal Khashoggi, or when it comes to the ongoing genocide in Xinjiang with China. So how do you have confidence that President Biden is genuine and consistent with his belief in human rights as a lever or having a strong place in American foreign policy, or at least his foreign policy?
I believe that it is an important place in his policy, and I have to believe that it has an important place in his foreign policy. And at the end of the day, all presidents are accountable to the public. And I think it is very important for the foreign policy community, for the media, for scholars, for people to express their reaction to this sort of foreign policy, human rights agenda driven policy, in order for the political calculations to continue to go in the way in which we believe they can and they must. Human rights has got to continue to be a foreign policy agenda. Look, these days, with all of the inequity, economic and political inequity in the world, and the increasing authoritarianism and the easy dependence by autocrats to revert to violence as a tool, citing sovereignty as the, you know, the overall cover, you know, which is what Azerbaijan did not 6 months ago, 7 months ago, citing sovereignty and doing exactly what the Ottoman Empire did 106 years ago, that is attack and kill its own citizens in the name of sovereignty and territory. So the world needs human rights driven agendas. Otherwise, this kind of violence, now I'm mentioning Azerbaijan, but you know, you mentioned China, we said Myanmar and Sudan and Syria earlier, it's all over. Genocide, Google genocide. You come up with 8-10 news items today. You know, Armenians are always remembering that the New York Times and the London Times, you know, were full of articles even as the genocidal acts were happening. Well, they're happening today and we see them on social media. But the ability of United States government and world governments to create a world order in which sovereignty does not trump human rights, that's on us to push for.
You mentioned something very interesting also about the need to on how we should try to think about governments recognizing genocides as an affirmation of the fact that they took place and not use them as sort of a political football sometimes in disputes. And of course, we've seen it in some of the pro-Turkish press and government press articles sometimes who portrayed past congressional resolutions to acknowledge the Armenian genocide as just the result of bad bilateral relations in the moment. We saw that in 2019 after the invasion of northern Syria. And of course, Congress today has a much more harder line when it comes to Turkey than the executive branch has in the past. So just to preempt some of these Turkish arguments that recognizing the genocide would just be a way to, you know, express anti-Turkish feelings towards it and towards the situation, and it's not an affirmation that a genocide took place. Do you worry that the current conversation has that kind of like political taint to it, that it's just because relations with Turkey are bad right now that the U.S. is considering recognition?
I think Turkey blew it 100 years ago, you know, immediately after the genocide in the waning days of the Ottoman Empire in Istanbul, in Turkey. The genocidaire, the implementers, the planners were brought to trial, some physically present, many in absentia, and found guilty. And the Republic of Turkey rejected that whole process and went on to establish what it considered a monoethnic republic. And it blew the opportunity to acknowledge that fundamental criminal act and push it away as somebody else is doing, the Ottoman Empire is doing, and not Turkey's. The fact that the Republic of Turkey continues to at best make excuses, but really most often simply reject the historical reality of the genocide, means that now it has taken on that responsibility, the responsibility of at the very least justifying massive ethnic cleansing, planned destruction of a whole ethnic group within its borders, genocide. Now it has, you know, it makes allowances for it, it makes excuses for it, instead of having then or even today taking the opportunity to say, you know what, we didn't do it, but it was wrong. Mm-hmm. Because what has happened is that sort of political violence continues to be okay in Turkey. Osman Kavala is in prison today. I don't know why, there is no because, but Osman Kavala was someone who loved Turkey and was proud to be an active citizen of his country, trying to make that country better for everybody. And the Turkey backlash really is a way of distorting the question, the issue. At the end of the day, Turkey has got to become a democratic country for its own citizens, for Armenians who live there, and for the genocide issue to finally come to a resolution in and by Turkey. Mm-hmm. It has to become a democracy. It has to be able to say, our citizens' rights matter. Citizens have the voice, not the authoritarian dictator. And at the end of the day, that this is something that is good for Turkey and Turkey's own development. This, you know, going around circles with trying to turn the conversation into something everything other than what it is not going to wash.
And this actually reminded me of an interesting remark that some had made in Turkey in the aftermath of the October resolution in 2019. And that was, it seemed to me, an argument that was used in a number of other countries that tried to dismiss questions of human rights abuses or genocide as, well, this is all political, this is their opinion, etc. They even brought up the idea that maybe they should recognize the displacement of Native Americans as genocide and so on, which you know, just ostensibly seemed like it came out of nowhere. But do you see that as part of almost like a trend in some of these authoritarian or authoritarian leaning countries to try to paint any question of genocide as political, and they're really that completely prevents any sort of recognition of what it actually means to say this was a genocide? In any case, beyond also the Armenian genocide, but as a whole.
That sort of response is a natural knee-jerk response by anyone in any country faced with any sort of extreme, indisputable crimes, wrongs. You know, it's used in the United States today when you say that, you know, Black lives matter in fundamental ways. And instead of dealing with that very complex, very difficult, now centuries old problem, instead the response is, well, what about? You know, well, what about? Yeah, all of those what abouts need to be dealt with on their own. Spinning it that way and not dealing with the actual consequences, the very fundamental human consequences of an act such as genocide, is simply not just irresponsible, but it's consequential because it means it's okay to do it again. There are Armenians all around the world today, 10 million. There are 3 million Armenians living in the Republic of Armenia just across Turkey's border, all of whom feel either psychologically or now, in this case, with Turkey's allying with Azerbaijan, actually physically insecure because the neighbor is one that not only has not come to terms with the crimes of the past, but continues to mouth and voice the opinions and attitudes of an unpredictable, calculating political leader that is not averse to using violence again. And so,
about Azerbaijan's president Aliyev here, right?
Aliyev, as well as its ally Turkey. I mean, Erdogan's statements over these last 6-8 months have not been comforting in any way. It has not only supported Aliyev's awful, bellicose, belligerent, aggressive, dangerous statements that continue and are not ever going to leave room for or lead to peace in this region. Mm-hmm. But Erdogan often expounds on them. And so all of those consequences, and I'm not even talking about psychological trauma, my grandmother's life, the fact that we continue to have to be in positions of explaining this victimhood that has been heaped upon us. I'm not even talking about all of that. I'm talking about geopolitical issues today with Turkey, NATO's second biggest power, being able, unrestrained, to engage in military activity across the border with a country whose people were the subject of genocide 100 years ago. Is this political? Hell, it's political.
Well, you know, speaking of those geopolitical aspects for a moment, we already had Turkey's foreign minister remark on reports that President Biden may change the U.S. position on Genocide Remembrance Day. And he said that all of his predecessors likely said, and that it would hurt bilateral relations between Turkey and the United States. And we can probably already imagine how the reaction in Turkey may go, especially among whether it's the nationalist elements or the Islamist elements of President Erdogan's ruling government to any U.S. recognition there. And maybe even among those who might not be immediately supportive of the president as well, but this is also taking place at a time where Turkish politics are very jittery with all these recent moves, such as exiting the Istanbul Convention as one example. Or then, of course, we have the struggling economy. Do you think that Turkey is more likely to use any US recognition on Remembrance Day to its own political benefit at home amidst these challenges, or actually dramatically change its relationship with the United States as it has threatened before?
The experience with France is an interesting indicator. You know, France first passed the Genocide Recognition Act and then later the act that makes denying the genocide a criminal act. And in both cases, you know, the same belligerent noises from Turkey, pulling back on some aircraft deals, if I remember right. And then 6 months later, everything was back to normal. So Turkey may make a lot of noises, but Turkey needs the US relationship. And so that's not the piece that worries me. The piece that worries me is what will happen domestically. There is a large Armenian population, a large, small Armenian population. It's a
I
small
remember the
minority, but
symbol.
still significant. There are 50,000 plus Armenians who have lived in, you know, Istanbul for generations, and others who came west from the regions escaping the genocidal areas. In addition to that, there are tens of thousands of Armenian citizens who are in Turkey as guest laborers, to use the Turkish word in reverse, you know, people who are there as labor migrants. I worry about what nationalist sentiments that the government might foment internally will mean for Armenians in Turkey who already live with a great deal of insecurity and knowing full well that no one's got their back. And I say this with, this is possibly the hardest part of this whole process. That is, our friends, my friends, people who have lived in Turkey because that is where they have lived for hundreds of years, really are at risk of either overt violence or all of the discrimination and the pressure that comes just short of violence. In either case, it's terrible. And I do hope that the US and the other diplomatic missions in Turkey, to the extent that they are able, make clear that this is not acceptable. Again, it would be Turkey not protecting. At the very end, not protecting its own citizens, and it's not acceptable.
And this in turn leads to what'll be my last question, and that is we started talking about now the possible reaction and maybe even expectations for President Biden that might be in the Armenian American community, which has long fought hard to get the United States government to recognize the genocide as such. And we saw some strong stands taken last year, particularly during the war in Nagorno-Karabakh, where Armenian American activists, I mean, they went after, and we reported on their campaigns to get some of Turkey's K Street lobbyists to cut ties with the government, and several of them did do so, which was, of course, quite impressive. And you know, after so many decades of conflict, of decades of looking for this recognition, on top of more recent events like the war and then the pandemic as well, how do you think Armenia or Armenians globally may respond to President Biden's recognition of the genocide if it does occur?
The obvious immediate response is with gratification, that in fact my great grandmother's not having been given the right to live, my grandmother's living a life of trauma, my mother's trying to beat back all of the consequences of victimhood and forever migrant, my own needing to come to terms with what is right and just in the world and what do I teach my children. And my children finally having hope that in fact, all of the good that we believe is in the world, you know, finally comes around even with political figures. So I think we're only gratified. I think the Republic of Armenia may see this as an indication that the United States is no longer missing in action and in fact is around and willing to protect the poor, the needy, the victims of violence, individual or communities around the world. Because even though I'm saying Armenia, this is something again that, that the world needs to know, that, that right does make might, that authoritarian governments do not have the right to get away with violence against their citizens, which exactly is what we're commemorating, right? So it's only gratification and hope that that human rights continue to matter.
Safi, thank you very much for taking the time to speak to me about this today. I really do appreciate it. And we're on Thursday right now and two days away from Remembrance Day. So we'll wait and see just what ultimately transpires in Washington when that happens. But in the meantime, thank you again for taking the time to join Turkey Abroad. I look forward to inviting you back on sometime soon.
Thank you, Nicholas. Thank you for your work.
My name is Nicholas Morgan, and this is Turkey Abroad.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.